Hello, and welcome to the Small Business Tax Savings Podcast, powered by Jetro and Associates. Get ready for another action-packed episode from our team that will help you save time, taxes, and keep more money in your pocket.
Hello, everyone. We have a really great episode this week. We have a special guest, Lane Kawaoka, who is a passive real estate investor and someone I think will be able to provide extremely valuable information to our audience. I don't want to keep you waiting, so let's get to the interview.
Hello, small business owners, and welcome back to the Small Business Tax Savings Podcast. My name is Mike Jezoshek. I'm a CPA and founder over at Jetro, which is a digital accounting firm servicing small business owners exclusively, helping them out with accounting, bookkeeping, taxes, and payroll. And on today's episode, we have a special guest. We have Lane, and I want to, you know, we periodically bring in special guests to touch on topics and dig deeper into certain areas, and Lane is perfect for that. Lane is the co-owner at MFPE Investments LLC, which controls 2,100 plus units, and where he is responsible for finding investment opportunities, analysis, and marketing. Lane obtained a Bachelor of Science in Industrial Engineering and a Master of Science in Civil Engineering and Construction Management from the University of Washington. In addition to an analytical engineering background, Lane has real-world experience in working as a project manager for over $230 million of capital construction projects in both the public and private sector. Working as a high-paid professional in corporate America and frustrated by the traditional wealth-building dogma, Lane has compelled to inspire and mentor other working professionals. And Lane, I just want to thank you, and we're really excited to have you on this week's episode.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mike.
We're going to go through a couple quick fire questions, just kind of introduce, you know, give our audience a little bit about what this interview is going to be like. So first topic, why do you do what you do?
So I blog and podcast about real estate investing because I didn't really like my engineering job very much and anything I can do other than that. And get me financially free by buying real estate and giving me the option of what I can do every day. That's what I do.
Awesome. Yeah. And for anyone that's listening, Lane is actually in Hawaii, so we can all be jealous of the way, the location of where he gets to spend his off hours. So, what's one ritual that helps you become better at what you do?
I think I'm pretty good at. I follow like this. Getting Things Done, David Allen is the book. So I work out of my inbox, which people tell you not to do, but I do it. And when I get done with something, I delete it and it's gone. So my inbox is my to-do list, and I have labels and do all kinds of different things like that. And, you know, just get things done.
So with your inbox being kind of your to-do list, are you an inbox zero kind of guy where you have to be at zero or you don't feel comfortable, or can you you kind of work around that?
Yeah, I definitely am a little anal like that. A couple of times a day I'll get to inbox zero. But, you know, when you're waiting for things, you know, you have a waiting for folder, right? And sometimes it's like waiting for 2 months or maybe waiting for this afternoon to check in. It's all about like sorting it.
Got it. Makes sense. So, you know, kind of the next question here, what app or system do you use to stay in control of your workload? I assume that, you know, do you use any kind of project management system or anything like that along with the email inbox, or is it just solely kind of that email inbox that's driving your to-do, your daily tasks, things like that?
Yeah. I mean, I looked into a lot of these, like these Apple-based products or these, you know, these task managers, but I just never liked the idea of like putting it into that thing. Because it takes time, and you know, time is the most valuable thing. You know, I think a lot of people spend too much time sorting and planning than actually doing, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of funny that you mentioned that. A lot of business owners that we talk to, they spend all this time finding a CRM, finding a project management system they like, and then, you know, 3 months later they find something else that sounds even better. So they'll spend just as much time now taking it out from one system and into the other. So it's really, you know, we always say find a solution that works and it's easy for you, and you know, just keep hitting it hard, and that's what's good to go with. So what's one book, podcast, or blog you would recommend to our listeners, and why?
Other than my podcast, Simple Passive Cash Flow, which is for working professionals picking up rental real estate. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't really listen to podcasts anymore because it's kind of the same old, same old. I think just meeting other like-minded people is how you should spend your time. that's the biggest thing. Awesome. And actually going out and doing it.
Yeah. Awesome. Now, you know, give our audience a little bit of preview about what we're going to be talking about, or we're going to be focusing on for the main part of the rest of the show.
Yeah, I think, you know, we were kind of talking about what would your, give your audience the most value. So, you know, I invest passively in real estate. I don't do all this house flipping stuff and wholesaling. I do stuff more for high paid professionals like myself. How do you effectively invest your money with the least amount of time and utilizing your high paid job to get you into bigger deals, better deals. So hopefully, you know, it's good for like the busy professional out there or someone like a small, like an entrepreneur, you know, who's killing it on something else, but, you know, wants to invest it passively in and get that higher returns that are found outside of like all the Wall Street, you know, retail products out there. They're just, you know, killing people with fees, hidden fees all over the place.
Yeah. And that's what I'm really intrigued by and really kind of excited for the rest of this interview, because I think as a small business owner, as people that are don't have experience or weren't brought up around investing in real estate, it's something that can be kind of scary to walk into. It's like when you first go to sign that first mortgage of your house, it's always a scary experience because it's something you haven't done before. So I'm really excited to get kind of that entry level, give people some insights on passive investing for, in real estate and, you know, the opportunities that are out there and really, you know, kind of what it's done for you in your career as well. So I'm going to pass it over to you if you just kind of want to get started, giving a little background of kind of where you came from, why you started doing this, and where you've been. And then, you know, we can knock out some of those other items we discussed.
Yeah, yeah. And I think to your point, you know, I think a lot of the Wall Street people and, you know, people pushing this dogma, they try and make it very confusing and scary, exactly so you can go back into their institutional funds.
Mm-hmm.
But it is pretty simple. So my story starts off like I was just like most people. I followed this linear path of go to school, get a good job. And, you know, I graduated in 2003. No, 2007 from engineering school. And, you know, went to school as a construction manager or went to work as a construction manager and saved my money to buy a personal residence to live in because that's what everybody said to do, right? You know, at this point, just like a programmed soldier, just kind of doing what my parents told me to do. I was traveling a lot for work and was never home. So I had this pretty big house. So I just started to rent it out. So the rents that were being brought in was like $2,200 a month.
Oh, wow.
And the mortgage was $1,600 a month at the time. This is back in like 2009.
Okay.
And like to a young 22-year-old kid, that was a lot of beer money, right? You just take the delta between $2,200 and $1,600. I knew nothing about the 50% rule, rent-to-value ratios, ABC class, single-family rentals. I knew nothing about that.
And so you're living in this place and renting it out, and you're still seeing that delta of, say, $600 a month.
Well, that's called a house hack. Like, if you have, like, a duplex or you can rent out a room. But, no, I just moved completely out, and I just
lived okay.
On the company dollar, traveling 100% of the time in hotels that they paid for.
Got it.
So I went the full way. But then I, like, shortly after, I was like, holy shoot, this is working. And I'm making a lot of money doing this. Because not only was it cash flowing, you know, the delta between the income minus the mortgage and expenses, but the tenant was paying down my equity for me. He was giving me equity and the property was appreciating. And I got all these really cool tax benefits. And I was like, whoa, I just got to keep doing this again and again. Because at the time, I mean, just like any new person, I'm sure it's pretty bad as a CPA too, right? I heard you guys going to get a lot of coffee for other people.
Yeah.
All that kind of like junk jobs. But my job as a construction manager sucked because I was outside a lot of time working with these like construction workers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this job sucks. I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. So those two things went hand in hand. And I was like, I got really motivated on learning all this stuff, listen to podcasts, books, and focus all my energy into like getting another property. Cause you know, this is my ticket out of the rat race is what I saw.
Okay. So you started with one property back then, and where has that kind of taken you from that one property? You buy multiple, and where'd you go from there?
Yeah, so then I learned about this thing called the rent-to-value ratio. So this is kind of a quick tip if you guys are listening here, you know, you can hop on Zillow, which isn't the greatest resource out there for property values, but it's a start. So you take any property out there and you figure out how much is it going to rent per month. And then you divide that by the purchase price. So a lot of places in that I'll buy will be like a $100,000 house that rents for $1,000 a month. So 1,000 divided by 100,000 equals 1%. Mm-hmm. So that 1% threshold is very important because you want to be higher than 1% in order to cash flow. You know, to have that spread between the income minus expenses and be able to pay for all these repairs and vacancy and a property manager. Because we're investors, we're not landlords. We pay for people to do our dirty work for us because we're doing this passively. This was in Seattle, and that property I bought was $350,000, and the rents that were being brought in was $2,200 a month. Obviously, this is a lot less than the 1%. And I didn't realize it at the time, but it wasn't that great of a rental. And I'll introduce another term, primary, secondary markets. Primary markets are all these cool places to live, like Los Angeles, all of California, in fact, Seattle, Hawaii, New York, Boston. You're not going to find the rent-to-value ratios in these markets because there's just a lot of dumb money. People with too much money just buying real estate. You have to look in more secondary markets, like, and these are like the second tier areas, like Birmingham, Atlanta, Indianapolis, Kansas City, Memphis, you know, good blue collar type of cities that there's not a run up in real estate prices. At these places, you can find solid rentals that are at that 1% threshold or higher.
Okay. And so that 1%, that's just on the mortgage or the rent versus the sale price of the house.
Right, right. Just a real quick and dirty way of like evaluating properties from a numbers perspective. Of course, I mean, I've got an analyzer people can download for free on my website. You can kind of get into the nitty gritty, but from like a, shoot from a hip numbers perspective, that it's pretty dang good.
Okay. And so when you're calculating that number, you mentioned kind of going to Zillow. Is Zillow kind of a first option look at what rent you might be able to receive at a certain type of house? Or how do you normally determine if you're just looking to do rough numbers, does this house make sense or not? What are you using for that rent number? You obviously know the sale price, but what are you using for that rent number?
Yeah, I mean, I think Zillow has like what it should rent for. I mean, if you only got like 2 minutes, that's a good way of doing it. But if you want to spend 10 minutes and find a little bit better number, there's a lot of websites like Rent-A-Meter. There's a paid one. I'm blanking on the name, but it's on my website. But you can pay for like a $30 report. Okay. I think you should be able to just go on Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist and just find some comparables in the area, and you should get it pretty dang close, like within $50.
Makes sense. So you started one, you bought the first rental property, or you kind of walked into a rental property that you might have not realized that was the initial intention, understood that maybe not a good rental spot. How did you go from understanding that's maybe not a good rental to where you are now today?
Yeah, so the next thing that I learned was, in addition to primary and secondary markets, which we talked about, you have A, B, and C, and D class properties and neighborhoods. So A class are like, your luxury apartments, all the probably, place like you live in, Mike, like it's like a lot of white collar professionals live in these kind of places. You're not going to find the rent to value ratios here. Mm-hmm. What you're trying to look for is more of a B or C class neighborhood and unit. These are more of like the blue collar types, or blue or white collar mix. These are not going to have the best schools, but they're going to have the rent-to-value ratios. Obviously, you want to stay away from the low end, the D-class and war zone type areas where you're going to need a gun to go collect your rent.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's a sweet spot in the middle. I think more times than not, new investors they go look for the best school districts, which, yeah, you want a nice area, but you're not going to have the numbers. You know, the numbers don't lie. It's all about, you know, income minus expenses, and in an area that, you know, at least there's not any violent crime in there. There's going to be a lot of theft, that's for sure. But, you know, this is why a lot of people will pull the brakes, right? But this is exactly the reason, and we know this as entrepreneurs, when, you know, there's this hesitation, you need to go dance with your fears and you need to move forward, because this is right before you start to hit all the profits.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. So, you know, you're focusing on C or D areas. And is that generally a
C and B? Stay away from D and war zone. Yeah.
So the C and B areas, is that generally a whole city, or is there neighborhoods or areas within a city that could be an A versus a C and B?
Yeah. So what you're trying to find is like the sub market. So if a market is like, you know, I guess maybe we can think of like a Dallas, for example. It's a big market, but there's probably a couple dozen submarkets in there.
Got it.
And even within those submarkets, there are blocks here that aren't that great, and there's blocks here that are pretty dang good. What you want to do at that point is find a broker or property manager that's going to represent your best interests. And you know, here's a little tip. Brokers always lie to you. I mean, they're here to make money. So if they're telling you a property is a B-class property, it's probably a C. But this is where it's important to, you know, build your other networks of other passive investors. So you can kind of, you don't just fly by yourself. You have other people to help you.
Makes sense. So, you know, you kind of mentioned that, you know, if you, let's say you're living in a city like New York or Seattle, where it's an area where rent might not be, buying a rental might not be a good idea. How do you advise these people, or advise someone that's looking to get into real estate investing to maybe go into an area that they're not local to? Or how do they know what might be a good area and what might not be a good area? Is that where you kind of mentioned using a network of other real estate professionals? Is that what you would recommend to someone just wanting to get started into it? I think the natural thought is, if I live in New York or if I live in Seattle, we're going to do it in Seattle or New York because that's where I'm located. But you're saying that doesn't always have to be the case.
Right. And I'm going to be very, very firm here. If you live in those places, you are not going to find properties at cash flow. Yeah, they might appreciate, but that's gambling in my opinion. I don't gamble. I go after the sure thing, which is cash flow. And I think a lot of people will beat around the bush and say, no, I can find a place. But I've coached many people doing this, and they're just wasting their time. And subconsciously, they're just delaying the, you know, moving forward. It's sort of like a defense mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
That if, you know, they're going to spend their time finding this thing that doesn't exist. If they do, like, you know, a lot of people buy properties in like Tacoma because it's a little off the beaten path. But just the fact that it's in near Seattle, like, it's the run up in prices. Another examples of those are like Phoenix and Las Vegas. You know, they're not on that primary market level for sure, but there's a lot of dumb money from California going to Phoenix and Las Vegas, you know, because they heard the Raiders are going in, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Stay away from the crowd. Stay away from the dumb money is the thought. And a lot of times the dumb money doesn't want to go to somewhere that they've never been before. They want to get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah. So I live in Seattle. I don't personally, but let's say I live in Seattle, and, you know, I'm hearing that Memphis, Tennessee is a good place to buy a real estate property. What are those steps that I have to take if I say, okay, I want to buy my first property out in Memphis or Birmingham or wherever that might be? What steps would you recommend someone take to get to that point where they're actually making a purchase on a rental?
Yeah, so I would start with the list of, like, you know, there's a dozen places that a lot of investors go to, you know, and I kind of mentioned it a little earlier. Secondary markets with robust economies that we're trying to find. Build a list. They're all on my website, you know, like Birmingham, Atlanta, Kansas City, Memphis, Little Rock, you know, Jacksonville, Florida, all those types. And you must know somebody in one of those areas, or you must, like, travel to those areas at some point. we're looking for a competitive advantage, even though it may be a slim advantage, that maybe you can, you need, it's like footing that you can build a base off of. So that's the first thing. Once you've kind of red circled like two or three of them, now the next step is to go to find a property manager in that area and start to build a relationship with them. And in parallel, connect with other passive investors that are kind of doing the same thing in that area. And then at that point, this is kind of where things get a little bit unclear, right? Like you got to figure out what the market is for that type of property and then just get a lot of data points. And at some point you got to just pull the trigger and put an offer and then go through the due diligence period with an inspector and ta-da.
Yeah. It makes sense.
Simple, right? I mean, it's not as simple as that, but those are the steps.
Yeah. And I think the process, and that's why I think it's good for our listeners. I think the process in general is pretty simple and pretty easy to understand. Obviously there's more complexities as you get into it. But getting that first one under the belt, I think, is the hardest part. And then going from there, you can, you know, grow, because once you see the potential that's there, you know, I've seen a lot of real estate investors come through, and really the potential is once they get that one, it snowballs really quickly. So, but it's getting that one or two, or, you know, just getting your feet wet in the idea of investing in real estate.
Right. And to make it a little easier, there's even a product called like a turnkey rental, where these rehabbers or flippers will buy a property that's all beat up, and then they'll fix all the major components like the roof, the HVAC, the plumbing, the flooring, they'll paint it. And they'll sell it to the end buyer like us, right? The sort of newbie investor who's out of state. And by the way, a lot of times we don't go and visit these properties. We use professionals like inspectors who will verify the property. Mm-hmm. And because I know that question always comes up. No, I don't visit my properties. We don't. Sophisticated investors don't do that. That's a waste of time.
Right.
So, you know, that's an option, right? Turnkey properties. And my first 20 podcasts were all about that, because that's what I did starting out. You know, I didn't really know too much, but I knew I had to move forward. Because even if I bought not the greatest rental property, it would be like way, way better than anything in the stock market. I mean, when you're investing in real estate on your own, you're making like 30% a year. When you include tax benefits, appreciation, mortgage pay down, and the cash flow. So that's like, why is it in regular Wall Street investments and REITs that you're only making like 5 to 10%? You know, what happened to all my money?
Yeah.
Well, it got taken up in fees.
Yeah, makes sense. Now, you know, when you're, you kind of mentioned, as you're a passive investor, you don't want to be a landlord, and that's what you want to avoid from. So when you're working with these project management companies, what are some tips or ideas that tell you, yeah, this is a good property management company, or no, it might not be a good fit, or, and as well as kind of what are some of those rates? I'm assuming they take a portion of the rental income. So what is some general rates that you're seeing in some of these markets?
Yeah, so you normally they'll take about 8 to 10% of the income. So, you know, if the property rents for $1,000, they'll take about $100 away. And then when they put a new tenant in there, they'll take maybe half for the full month's rent. So they're taking a chunk, but, you know, they're taking care of a lot of the big stuff, the day-to-day, right? So the only time you get a call is like, hey, you know, this plumbing thing broke. We think it's going to be $300. Can we go and fix it? You know, or to handle an eviction. Like, I don't know how to do an eviction. I sort of know how to do it because it's happened a few times. But I don't know how to, like, you know, who do I go to, right? Because that's their job.
Right. And that's what makes it so easy, is that by having that project management company, you're really kind of taking most of the work involved on it. You're just exactly that, just an investor. Yeah. And so they're almost that fee, or that fee that you're paying. If you compare it to the stock market, they're like your financial advisor, or you're the person that's taking that fee for the trading of you. In this point, you're paying the property management company to manage that investment of yours, while you just kind of reap in more of the benefits and cash flow from it.
Yeah. But the difference is that property manager actually works his butt off, and yeah, he's actually the investment at the end of the day is actually makes more money than that, that sort of like institutional product.
Yeah.
But you've got to use these professionals to your advantage. And a lot of my investors like are like doctors, lawyers, accountants, engineers. You know, their time is better spent with their families, actually having a life, and then kicking butt at their day job.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So to spend $100 per rental, I mean, that's no brainer.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, especially for someone that's looking to be hands-off, that definitely makes sense. Now, as far as what are some best practices or ideas that you have around managing properties remotely? So whether it's one city or multiple cities or one property or 20 properties, what are some best practices you recommend to investors?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is that getting the right property manager. And then kind of going back to your other question, I actually wrote an article yesterday about 25 questions to ask your property manager during an interview.
Okay.
So definitely a good read there, a good list. But yeah, picking the right person, but more importantly, going out for referrals, right? Like if you know somebody who used this guy and he's worked with him a year or two and it's done good work, then man, jump on the bandwagon, right? We're not trying to recreate the wheel here. But in terms of best practices, you know, it's just like we do this at our day jobs, right? We have to work with other people. We have to keep them accountable. Phone and email. You know, I like to do emails personally. Like, you know, that's where we started the whole thing where if like a plumbing issue comes up, I'm like, all right, Mike, what's the game plan? You know, what's your plan of attack? And give me a timeline, scope, schedule, budget. You know, if you're going to tell me it's going to cost this much, when is it going to be done by? And I'm going to follow up when you said it was going to be done by. If not, I want another remedial action. So it takes a little bit of, you know, project management skills, but you know, it's nothing too complicated, right? I mean, if you let these guys run around and you don't give them structure, they're gonna treat you and they're gonna work with the other squeaky wheels clients that they have, and pay more attention to their product. So you just have to be a good owner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. And as far as when it comes to that piece, do you have any, and this is not meant to scare people, but just help people understand that sometimes things don't go perfect and sometimes it might not work out. Do you have any horror stories with a rental property you've had where, you know, you thought it was going to be a great opportunity and all of a sudden something happened that erased that opportunity away from you?
Yeah. I mean, it happens all the time. And I mean, like, you know, it seems like I have for each rental, I had like 10 properties a few years back. And so it's a good sample size. Out of those 10 properties in 1 year, I'm likely to have one or two evictions happen. I did have one where like they just totally trashed the place on their move out and like the sheriff had to come, threw all their crap out on the street. And that one costed like 15 grand, 20 grand to fix up, get back in business. Yeah, you'll typically, with 10 properties, you'll typically have like one or two HVAC issues. You might have to replace one of them. That's a few grand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you'll have some kind of plumbing thing like once or twice or once a quarter with that many properties. And then, you know, out of those 10, you'll probably lose three money. You know, three will be in the red for the year. You know, but I'll tell you the on the average, yeah, you're probably going to make like $200 to $300 of cash flow per property overall. So it's a numbers game, and this is why when you're going in, you got to underwrite. You have to put ample repairs, expenses, because these things do come up. You're going to have vacancies, right? But it's a numbers game. It's tough when you have like one or three of them because it's such a small scale. Mm-hmm. But once you to get more, now it becomes more of a business, and it's just numbers at the end of the day.
And that's a nice thing. You mentioned evictions and finding people or vacancies. That, again, that's something that's mostly handled by that property management company, right? Or if you have plumbing issues and things like that, that's something that the property management company is handling, getting that fixed. Of course, you're paying any costs related to that. But as far as managing it and dealing with the headaches around it, that's being done by the property manager.
That's correct. And that's another reason why you stay away from A-class rentals, because it's hard to fill those things.
Mm-hmm.
With B and C class, I mean, that's where most of the population is. So you have more than ample amount of customers out there. You sort of pick from the best. So you screen the best candidates.
Yeah. Now, so I read somewhere you had three rules of investing that you use when investing in passive rental activities, and that's income, leverage, and tangible value. Can you explain those a little bit more for our audience?
Yeah. So like, you know, people ask like on Quora, there's a super vague question of like, should I invest in it? And I always, you know, I created this framework for dispelling like, you know, another real estate mutual fund kind of a thing, right? So the first one is, you know, is it a real asset? Are you getting a real piece of like hard tangible asset as opposed to like some certificate of some company that can, like the Lululemon CEO can say something stupid and then now like 30% of their value is gone, right? You know, real estate's nice because it's a hard tangible asset. You're sort of diversified in an amount of bunch of commodities are into that asset. And there's the land component too. The second is like you want to be in something that you can leverage. And a lot of people will think, well, that's where things get dangerous, right? But the government wants to do you to do this. And for real estate, they're giving you like these sort of government subsidized loans by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that are like, you know, pretty sweet when you compare it to other businesses. And then the last one is like it's making income, right? Because in times of trouble, and I believe a recession is coming up in the next year or few, that, you know, at the end of the day, this asset will cash flow, you can ride out the storm, right? That's why I don't like, you know, high-end real estate, you know, luxury stuff, because they don't cash flow. And, you know, like cryptocurrency, it's not a hard tangible asset. I mean, people can say it is. I mean, I guess it's kind of like gold, but it's not, you can't really leverage that stuff and it doesn't produce income. Mm-hmm. You know, gold doesn't produce income, for example.
Yeah. And so, you know, along those same lines, and what's some of the math behind, you know, rental analysis? So if you're looking at a property, is it just the rent to the home value price, or is there other kind of math or equations that you're looking at to really kind of say, yeah, this property may be good and it's worth looking forward or looking more into, or I'm going to throw this one to the side and move on to the next one?
Yeah, I mean, I have a spreadsheet that has like all these, you know, expenses and line items that you should probably think about and fine tune. I mean, you can be free to download that. But, you know, for just speaking on the podcast, another rule of thumb that we like to use is called the 50% rule. So for example, that $100,000 house, we kind of know that 50% of that income will likely go to expenses. So of that $1,000 of rent, we know $500 will go to expenses. So how that breaks down, if you got $1,000, $100 will go to repair. Another $100 should be set aside for like vacancies. Another $100 is going to go to your property manager. And then, you know, another $200 should be put away for like big cap X things, like the roof get repaired every 15, 20 years, or the HVAC will go out every 10 years. You know, I have a spreadsheet that like sort of calculates that, and it's usually about a little under $200. Mm-hmm. So then you're left with $500 using the 50% rule, and it's being very conservative. But then now you pay your PITI, your mortgage, taxes, insurance, and then that's where you're left with, you know, sometimes nothing, sometimes negative. But ideally, we like to close on properties that you're making at least $200. After being super conservative.
Got it. Makes sense. And so explain to our audience a little bit more about what you do, what you've built as far as helping other people looking in to get into real estate investing and kind of the various things that you have going on.
Yeah. So I started my podcast in 2016 because all my friends were asking like, you know, you don't even like visit these properties. How do you buy these things? You know, I was living in Seattle at the time. And I just got so tired of telling them and nobody does anything, right? So what does a millennial do but make a podcast or YouTube channel now? And just have them go. That's why I say like the first 20 podcasts are all you really need to learn about like turnkey rentals. So that's what I kind of started with. And then, you know, I've been doing that for the last few years. And now I have like mastermind group coaching is sort of how I monetize that. If you want to get around motivated people to kind of co-source due diligence. But I mean, everything out there is on free on the internet, right? I mean, I think I'm very against these $20,000, $40,000 guru programs. You know, it's all there. We just have to kind of work together.
Yeah. Other than that, is there anything else that you wanted to share today or think would be good information as kind of some closing comments?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, maybe the talk about all like the vacancies and all the horror stories might scare people. And you're probably, you know, you're probably going to do the 1% rule and realize there's nothing around your house. But, and most 90% of people listening won't do anything. But I think if you spend a little bit of time, like a couple hours a week for like a few weeks to learn this stuff, listen to some podcasts, like I said, do the first 20 podcasts, but then you can start to invest your money and make probably like 3 or 4 times more than investing in your traditional mutual funds and 401k stuff. I mean, you know, like my parents are still working, but I retired like a few weeks ago. You know, it works.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, you know, I'm creating my pension today with each individual rental I acquire. Numbers don't lie. You know, people do.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we work so closely with small business owners. And really anything that you're looking to, that you're stepping out of the box and doing something than what the path that everyone takes, go to school, get a job, buy a house, have kids, and that's it. When you step out of that path and you start a business or you start into real estate investing, whatever it might be, there's always horror stories. You know, everybody can tell you a horror story about a business owner that they know that gave everything he had to start this business and it fell apart. But there's also a lot more success stories too. And so I think that's always good to keep in mind that if you have no risk tolerance, you know, you're right. It might not be something that's good to jump into.
Yeah. We know what's going to happen without a doubt. You're a CPA, I'm an engineer. We can get together and make this spreadsheet and you will be working for the next 40 to 50 years and barely retire.
Mm-hmm.
If you want that, then cool. What you're doing is perfectly fine. But if you want to be financially free in like 5 to 10 years, where you're going to have to get out of your comfort zone a little bit, and it's not to say we're going to go flip some houses and build stuff out of scratch. No, we're going to buy like stabilized rental properties one by one, slowly, get a little bit better. The first one will be very shaky. We're going to get a little bit better each time. And we're going to, you know, totally transcend the whole financial market and all the system that we've been brought up in.
Yeah, no, this is great stuff. And I really appreciate you coming on, because I think what's great is that we talk every week about bookkeeping, taxes, and how to better manage your business and how to help your business grow. But a lot of people are also, as they're growing their business, they have extra cash, they're business owners, they're fortunate. And so they're always looking for other options to do with that extra cash that's coming along. And they don't want to push everything that they have in one basket. And this is a great opportunity to help move your resources around and give you an extra opportunity for, you know, passive income. So it definitely, I really appreciate you coming on. This is some good stuff. Now, if people want to find you, reach out to you, listen to your podcast, look at your website, kind of download some of those things you mentioned, where can they go? And I'll also put them in the show notes.
Yeah, I mean, my website is simplepassivecashflow.com. You can check out the podcast, Simple Passive Cashflow, on iTunes. Sorry, it's my dog. And you guys can, you know, I would say that check out the first 20 podcasts if you're listening to single family rentals. But my email is lane@simplepassivecashflow.com. And you're always looking to kind of connect with newer investors. I mean, it's a pleasure to like work with people who think that they're going to stay in like the 40-hour a week or for like 40-year deal, and like tell them, well, you can be out in like four to 10 years usually. I mean, especially you accountant guys, man, you guys can be out like that.
Yeah. Well, that's a cool looking pup. Awesome. Well, yeah. Thanks again, Lane, for coming on. I will put those links into the show notes, and Thanks for all the great information. I think you'll have a lot of people coming up and really kind of looking in and sparking people's interest in checking out this whole passive real estate if they're not already involved in it. So thanks again for coming on.
That's it for this week's episode. I want to remind you to check out our website, www.taxsavingspodcast.com. And this is just a great resource to go to and check out our most recent episodes, as well as find extra items if you want to take what we discuss here on our weekly episodes and dive a little bit deeper. Also, don't forget to join our Facebook group where we share tons of value and you have the opportunity to bring up situations you are faced with and we can help you out. You can join by simply searching in Facebook for Small Business Tax Secrets, and there should be a group that pops up to join. If you enjoy our weekly episodes, I ask that you just please leave a review on whatever platform you use to listen to us and share with other business owners. Our goal is to just help out business owners that need accounting, tax, and help growing their business. If there's a topic that you want us to touch on, shoot me an email or reach out to me on social media. Thanks again for tuning in for another episode, and I will see you next week.
This has been another episode of the Small Business Tax Savings Podcast from the team at Jetro & Associates. If you have any questions, feel free to email them, tax@jetrotax.com. We have packages for small business owners starting at just $75 a month. If you enjoyed our podcast, please take the time out to give us a 5-star review in iTunes or wherever you listen. This helps us to bring you useful tips to help you grow your small business. Thanks for listening and have a great day.